KUT.
Tu n'avais aucun remords, seulement le besoin de mon corps. Si jamais t'étais bon me dire, tu ne souffriras pas mon sourire. On n'aurait jamais dû s'installer dans l'autre. Ma chère, évite de venir la vôtre. C'est ma vie. Mais c'est ton style de m'arracher. Poursuit dans la nuit. I was crazy in the dark, and there were lots and lots and lots of spikes. Des cailloux de malheur dans mes veines, du sang dans la haine. Ah, des scènes figées dans la peine, cire les canons, déchire. Toi et moi va être spectaculaire comme les feux d'artifice dans les airs. Et ce qui éclate à l'intérieur va brûler nos yeux et voler nos vœux. Come on, come on, come on, tell me that you love me. Ma vie soit remplie de fourmis qui me poursuit dans la nuit. Je grimpe les falaises de ma malaise dans la nuit, remplie de pluie, remplie.
See you.
Hi, this is CKUT 90.3 FM, All Things McGill. My name's Mayan, and in a few minutes we're going to have an interview between Rose and B, and it's going to be super interesting. It's about Montreal's historic sex industry. Stay tuned. Here's some music first.
Don't leave me, I'm crazy, okay? Don't leave me, I'm crazy, okay? And in the evening when I tell you what I've done all day, don't leave me, I'm crazy, okay? Don't leave me, I'm crazy, okay? Staying up late trying to pull it all together, and I don't know what to do, and I don't know whether I got lucky meeting you or it's just another reason to feel crazy. Don't leave me, okay? Don't leave me.
So strong, I never knew, never felt, never had something. All the stories say something, something more than I ever knew. Something real, try and see something right, true, and everything, oh, you'll ever need. Just got to find something to keep you burning through the cold. Well, don't forget that one thing, far from shining clear as gold. Well, don't forget, just tell me about it. Everything you want to be, no more playing now. Don't you ever go, oh, don't you forget about it. Just enough, they say just around, and I wanna know, wanna be, wanna see,
what this means, cause I know that this got to be something more than everything you'll ever need, cause you just put it on something to keep you burning through the cold. Well, don't forget that one thing, far from shining, glitter. Just tell me about it. It's everything you ever need. No more playing now. Well, don't you ever go. Oh, don't you forget about it. Everyone's got to find that something, one thing to hold on. Everyone's got to find that something. Hold on so long, don't you forget about. Everyone's got to find that something, one thing to hold on. Everyone's got to find that something. Oh, hold on so long and don't forget about it. Everyone's got to find that something. Oh, don't you forget about it. Don't you forget about it. Don't you.
Okay, so hi B, we're gonna do an interview with you today about your research project. So first I just wanted to ask you how you're doing and if you could tell us a little bit about yourself, what you've studied, and where you are based.
Sure, thank you. I'm doing really good. I'm enjoying the heat that we're experiencing right now, and by enjoying, I mean I've developed a codependent relationship with my tower fan. I am alumni of McGill. I graduated last spring, so spring 2020, and I did my degree in honors history, and I minored in gender, sexuality, and feminist studies. So my background is primarily in, you know, historical research and like kind of like historical methods. And I currently live in Montreal.
Wonderful. So can you describe a little bit about your research project, Erotic Cartography, and how it came about?
Yeah, basically I have been spending a lot of time thinking about kind of the histories of Montreal that aren't really documented. And I think this was especially like post Montreal 375, like kind of what goes into kind of like dominant conceptualizations of the city. And, you know, by extension, what is excluded from a lot of those narratives. And something, especially like as someone who isn't originally from the city, I think you often encounter is that commercial sex is such a big part of Montreal's history and Montreal's conception. So I wanted to engage in a project that was kind of, you know, an exploration of and an homage to that history. So a lot of what I did over the course of this project was like looking into specific locations and kind of their background, like when do certain businesses within the landscape of commercial sex emerge? How does the sex industry kind of factor into the physical landscape of the city? Because, you know, I think it's easy to forget this, especially because so much of the sex industry has moved online in the past like 2 decades. But kind of like the physical presence of advertising and like sites of commercial sex in this city. Like I think one of the first things I was struck by when I first came to McGill was walking downtown on St. Catherine and seeing like the super sex sign, or, you know, being near Concordia and seeing like the big neon massage signs, because, you know, growing up, I don't think I'd ever, like with very few exceptions, I'd never really lived in a city where it was so hyper visible. So that's kind of like the background of this project.
Where are you from originally? I don't know if you already said or not.
I grew up kind of all over, but I spent most of my teenage years in Toronto. But I also lived in like Vancouver and Edmonton, both of which are, you know, not small cities, but maybe it was also just like the age that I was at the time. But I certainly don't remember commercial sex being so hyper visible in any of them, except maybe for like a few exceptions in Toronto.
Yeah, I mean, I can definitely relate because I'm from Charleston, South Carolina, which is a really small, I mean, it's not small, it's the biggest place in South Carolina, but everything is just hidden, you know what I mean? And nothing is outright neon sign, anything like that. So I can definitely see what you mean, that it's a bit of a shock coming to Montreal. Anyway, so I guess my next question is, what drew you to start researching this topic? But I guess from a place that, you know, it hasn't really been researched that much, right? I mean, you can expand more on that if you want.
Yeah, well, there is actually like a lot of grassroots research that has happened on this front. Like the folks from, I don't know if you two are familiar with Stella, but they're a sex worker advocacy organization here in Montreal, and some of their coordinators have like contributed to like scholarship on the history of the industry here. There's like Karen Herland at Concordia. So there is kind of like work happening on the history of the sex industry here. But another big thing for me was kind of like having kind of like familiarity with the industry, and like having a lot of friends who were also, you know, workers, and kind of seeing how they weren't just interacting, you know, with clients, but also like sex workers interact with institutions within a city. So like, you know, businesses and like law enforcement. So there's like so many actors other than just like the worker client relationship. And that's something that I was really interested in.
Super interesting. Okay. So how did you engage with the community, the greater Montreal community, while conducting this research?
I spent a lot of time doing interviews, which was a really cool part of this work, like getting to actually talk to other workers, or getting to talk to folks who did either like frontline or advocacy work, was, I think, a really rewarding part of this process to me. Like, I chatted with some of the folks at Stella. I chatted with some of the coordinators at PIAMP, which I don't know if you two are familiar with them, but they do kind of like outreach and support work for youth who sell sexual services. So a lot of that, a lot of like interviews one-on-one with people who like have experience in the industry, just because like a really big part of what I wanted to do was also like kind of prioritizing like hearing from sex workers in this project. Like I think that because of kind of how widespread stigma is and how a lot of this work happens in kind of surreptitious ways, often you hear from everyone but sex workers in like conversations about sex work. So I really didn't want to be doing that with this project. Other ways that I got to engage with the community were through archives, which was really, really fun. I emailed like, I think, half of the boroughs on the island asking if they had like archival materials that they had which could potentially relate to my research. And I think that kind of like put a lot of folks off. Like I think I emailed the like Westmount tribal society, and they were like, why would we have any documents on like sex work? But you know, I got to like spend some time at the bunk and look through a lot of their files and a lot of what they have, because they have like a super comprehensive collection. So it was interesting because a big part of how I got to, I think, interface with the wider Montreal community was like through the historical record and kind of being able to locate different businesses, different incidents, like through these archival materials that like then give kind of the opportunity to map out the whole city and its history.
I mean, you majored in history, right? At the so that those skills you acquired at McGill must have really helped you in this process of like going through archives and everything, right?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, a big part of it, I think, for me was kind of being able to engage in a practical application of things I'd learned from my degree, but not have the final project be like prohibitively academic and like, you know, hard to engage with. I think that there's perhaps like a way in which a lot of academic writing can be kind of like dense and heavy. And I think that there is a place for that and that can be really useful, but I wanted what I produced to be a little bit more kind of like easy to digest. And I think that was a big part of like why the mapping element of this was important to me, because for folks who don't necessarily want to sit down and read like an essay on criminalization or an essay on policing or whatever, they can kind of engage with the project through a different means.
Yeah, well, one of my questions was going to be why you chose a map format when research is predominantly presented with like written documents, the journal articles, or any other. So yeah, that's super interesting. And definitely like when we visited the website and having the map be like the center point of the your research, it made it very accessible and it made it easy to digest, which I find is not necessarily the case for a lot of research today.
Yeah. And I also found it really interesting that you're going to do a zine. Do you know when that will be out?
I have exactly one copy of it. I took it to a print shop and got ghosted by the guy who runs the print shop. So I have been really procrastinating on going and like trying to get it done somewhere else. I also have the entire PDF for it stored on my old laptop. So I need to like go through my emails and like find the file, because it's a little bit, it's kind of like somewhere in the ether of my Outlook account. But whenever I get that done, which will hopefully be soon, I'll be dropping off copies at QPIRC, McGill and Concordia, because they are the people who kind of like gave me the financial support to do this project.
So how did the pandemic affect your research? Because I know you've been doing like a lot of interviews, you've been going to a lot of locations. So was all that like complicated by the pandemic? Well, obviously, I bet it was, but.
I think that, I mean, one thing that I really wished I could do was do more of my interviews in person. And there was a point in the process where I was thinking that it would be really, really cool to interview like strip club owners or like massage parlor owners, which I think is also maybe a little bit trickier because those are people who maybe would be, I don't want to assume that they would be more hesitant to be interviewed, but I think that there's an important aspect when you're doing research on a topic like this, where there is kind of like an element of criminality about it, where you, I guess for lack of a better word, don't want to be a narc, whether that be like intentionally or on purpose. And, you know, that was something that I think I, pretty early on, I was like, this isn't the most feasible because we are in a pandemic. It's not like I can just like walk into a strip club and like make conversation with someone about this. The process of accessing a lot of the archival materials I used, like when I went to the bunk, was definitely impacted by COVID, but it wasn't like entirely off the table. It was kind of just like, I couldn't just waltz in and chat with an archivist. I had to make an appointment online and tell them exactly what I was looking for. And I was like alone in this massive reading room, like masked up, with all of my things in a locker because they don't let you bring anything in for like sanitation purposes. So it definitely was impacted by COVID, but I think that especially because a lot of my work was adaptable to being done online or kind of like with distancing in mind, it wasn't impossible. Like I just ended up doing a lot of Zoom and phone interviews with workers as opposed to, you know, maybe getting to sit down with them like I'd liked. So it wasn't a deal breaker, I guess, in short.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess with things opening back up, you can, I mean, are you going to continue your research or like what is your future research look like in this subject specifically?
So technically my time working on this project ended at like the beginning of January, because I received a stipend from Cupert Concordia to work on it through the summer and then another one from Cupert McGill to work on it through the fall. The website is still up. All the articles are still up. I, again, still need to get the zines printed. But I don't know. I've been thinking about how I want this project to move forward and kind of like one of the things that I've been really interested in talking about is kind of like the spatiality of the internet in relation to the sex industry. Like thinking about how things like advertising sites, escort review boards, similar platforms are all, you know, like they're also geographically situated, even if they're occurring digitally. So I was working on some research on that front for a conference at Concordia, and I've been thinking about finding a way to integrate that into this project. But I think that in an ideal world, what I would love is for this website to stay up and to have someone else come into this work, like maybe 2 years down the line or something, so that other people can kind of contribute to this. Because, you know, I'm one person, my perspective is like obviously limited, and I would love to kind of get other folks implicated in this.
What was your experience gaining funding from an alternative grassroots organization like Cupert? Because I know that's what you did, and I'm just curious as to how that occurred and if you have any advice for people who have like a research project like you that they'd like to get going.
Totally. Yeah. So I was funded for this project through Cupert Concordia summer stipends, which are actually open right now. So if folks are thinking of applying to them, that is an option. But basically for both Cupert McGill and Concordia, they offer stipends of, I think the Concordia one is like $4,000 this year, and the McGill one was either like $1,000 or $10,000 this year. But when I did it, it was a smaller amount. It was like each one, I think, was $2,000. So the breakup kind of varies. And basically, you just submit an outline of what your project is going to be, a timeline, a budget, and kind of an explanation of what the ethos of your project is. Like, both Cupert McGill and Concordia, I think, really value the research that's being done being grassroots. They don't want it to fall into kind of the academic trap of having outside observers doing research on like marginalized communities or underrepresented communities. So a big part of like what you're engaging with in this application is like, what is my relationship specifically to this community? Am I part of this community? Am I like somehow implicated in it? Kind of like what is my claim to being able to like speak on their behalf? And how am I implicating other members of the community into my work? I found the application process pretty straightforward, in part because, you know, during my time at McGill and like being involved in student organizing, I'd done a lot of like discretionary fund applications for both organizations. So like I kind of had a sense of what their values were and what they were looking for. But, you know, also for folks who I think have never done anything resembling like grant writing or like project proposals like this, it was not that scary. Like it was relatively painless. Yeah. I think that's kind of the bulk of what I have to say about the application process.
That's awesome to hear because I didn't even know Cupert existed. Because, I mean, schools in Montreal, they tend to have like a ton of resources, and then people just don't know about them. And that's why about it on this radio show is great, because people will know, oh, okay, applications are open. Maybe I can investigate this topic a little bit more with money.
Yeah.
Totally. And I think that problem is like even more augmented when you're talking about research that isn't directly about, for example, like McGill. This is the case for Concordia too, but I think at McGill there's a really big problem where like people from outside McGill don't know that there are like resources at McGill, like whether this be financial or otherwise, that they actually can access. Because for something like this, obviously a lot of work that happens is just like for financial purposes, like things need to be considered to benefit the McGill community. Like when I worked in other campus organizations, things always came back to like, if we are funding this, how does it benefit the McGill community? But the answer to that is just like simply that McGill is in Montreal. Like there are people who grew up in Montreal who go to this school, who work at this school. There are, you know, in the case of my project, like there are sex workers who go to McGill. There are sex workers who have worked at McGill. And, you know, all of those connections are important too. Like a project does not simply need to be about the university itself to be viable.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's very interesting. And that's all the questions we have, but I just want to say thank you for doing the research that you do. And I'm really glad like we came across your website and we were able to talk to you more about this. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, and hopefully it becomes a community thing. It can grow.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Thank you.
Time. tu me diras pas quoi faire. Je t'annie de me bâtir pour tomber à terre. C'est pas la dernière fois, mais pour de vrai. À force de me détester, je pense que je me plais. Je pense j'ai pas assez de soleil. Le blanc est trop sublime de ma face. On va me coucher quand tu te réveilles. Je me trouve des sourires de surface. Oh, oh, oh. Je m'enfuis. Oh, oh, oh. Sans savoir où aller. Perdu à force de chair. De me détester, je pense que je me plais. T'as grandi sans vouloir te faire chier. Parce qu'au début, on t'a dit qu'il fallait rêver. Mais quand t'es arrivé à 25, t'as compris que c'était possible. Qu'on te demande de recommencer. Aujourd'hui, y'a plus rien qui te fait rire. Ça paraît tellement quand t'as quelque chose à dire. Un regard, un soupir, t'es impossible à lire. Plus je veux comprendre, mais plus ça va et plus ça empire.
Oh, wish I was what I was when I wished I was what I am now. I wish I was what I was when I wished I was what I am now. Could have saved a whole lot of wishing.
Hi, this is CKUT 90.3 FM All Things McGill, and here are some listings for you. On Wednesday, June 16th at 1 p.m. EDT, there's a trans and non-binary composer and artist panel discussion, and it's free and online. It's an event by the Saskatoon Symphony Orchestra, and this discussion will explore various aspects of navigating the performing arts and composition worlds from a trans or non-binary perspective, while celebrating the constellation of genders that exist in the world. The second is the Jeremy Leon Quartet performance at Restaurant Le Petit Marché. It's free and it's on Friday, June 18th at 7 p.m. EDT. On Thursday, June 17th at 12 p.m., there is a Stop Insuring TMX, which is the massive tar sands oil pipeline going from Alberta, Canada, which would traverse through at least 15 First Nations unceded territories. This is an event by the Climate Justice Action McGill. The price is free and it begins on Avenue McGill College. The last listing is an art exhibition called Shadowlands from June 14th at 12 a.m. to June 25th at 11:45 p.m. EDT. It's an online event, it's free, and it's by Art and Entertainment. It's a juried exhibition organized by People and Paintings Gallery in New York. This was All Things McGill. Thanks for listening.
Turn it up.
Did you think that I might turn my back and run away? You should know it's not my ordinary and not my everyday kind of way. But can I take a leap with you? Take a leap with you now. When it's rocky, I'll make it smooth.
I'll make it smooth.
If there's room for two, take a leap with you now.
to know if it's okay to go home. Somebody's worrying, say, should we let mother know? Here comes the pain in his head, like she's waiting, ashing a lit cigarette while he's shaking. Gotta find it out, and you know the kids will be alright. People trying to place her down, all little face and cheeks more grown than that these days. She don't give a damn what they say, you best leave it. Well, she doing fine anyway, they'll see it. Oh, things ain't always bright now, but God knows she's trying. Hide behind it all. So trust me, the kids will be alright.
I left you out there on your own. I know. to the islands. Got a mind full of new tricks. Bluebells in my full hands. Cloudy rooms, mirrors, open bars, and palm trees. Bulletproof vests, game mess, and gold teeth. We a team in the cellar, in the cellar. Tell the teller and then back to the hoteller. On vacation, got a scuff back at the station. Cause my broke ass finally got us picked up from the pavement. And you told me, you fucking told me to double check. And that's the only, fucking only shit that I left. Chain, trap, lines, tie, sheets, ride, beat that, yeah. And the crowds, they come, they go. But I saw you all alone. The sirens coming close. Rose, I took the door. I know I left you out there on your own. I know I had to take care of their phone.
All learned from COVID-19 is that something small can spread quickly, like a ripple. If enough of us do our part by getting vaccinated, we can start a wave. A wave of Canadians helping each other return to the people and places we love. We can all help by getting vaccinated. Learn more at canada.ca/COVID vaccine. A message from the Government of Canada.
I hope and